our life with Jesus mines for us the power of stories, visions, memories, and dreams. And this old Bible story that I read that you heard just now stirs my own mountaintop experiences and memories, and I think that it may do the same for you if you let it. A friend of mine pointed out recently, it was this week as a matter of fact, which you and I can ratify, that the radical change of a community from disaster is a devastating experience requiring long recovery, and the community is never the same. She said it's a mass experience of PTSD for those who had to endure and are still enduring. She mentioned floods and fires and storms, and she remembered a visit to Alaska in 2004 where everyone had their story of experiencing the big earthquake. 1964 was 40 years earlier, which itself stirred my own memory of that earthquake. Linda and our kids were living in Yokohama, Japan at the time. And I remember the tsunami warning and fear, and it was the biggest one we had had in the time that we'd been there, and it was terrifying. And she mused about where all our apocalyptic stories of the wrath of God come from. She wrote this week, commenting on my blog post about the early morning fog, and she told me a vision of her own that came to her. She said when her parents were deathly ill in France some 30 years ago. She said it was touch and go for a while. And what came to her was that she was on a path in the woods, could not see but a foot or two in front and back and on the side. She was walking on pine needles and dry leaves, everything gray. And she said, the message I was given was that all I needed to do was just put one foot in front of the other and that everything would be all right. And it was for a time. I have visions and dreams and memories that come back to me, and they're stirred from time to time, stirred by a crisis or stirred by an event or stirred by a Bible story, such as the one we read here this morning and various Sunday mornings. And some of these stories remind me from listening to the country and Western music that I used to love so dearly that it was almost like a song, and I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Here, Peter, James, and John on the mountain with Jesus, Moses, and Elijah, God himself from the cloud, a day to recall and to tell children and grandchildren about, and even to save over and pass down for us today, ages later. Not only a physical event, but an all-consuming rush of joy that comes but seldom in a lifetime, and the realization, I'll never forget this. There's nothing like a mountaintop. I suddenly remember realizing I was in love, a breathless rush of euphoria, feeling captured and no escape. Nurses bringing my newborn babies out for me to see for the first time, and me going dizzy, almost fainting with emotion. Spiritual, religious mountaintops. Nearly 40 years ago for me, a Eucharist at a conference of the Episcopal Charismatic Movement high in the mountains of North Carolina. And seminary. Senior year, I studied my last semester in residence at Virginia Seminary in Alexandria. And every Friday that I was there, I went out to the prayer and praise services at Truro Parish in Fairfax. And in fact, Linda and I had been members of Truro in the late 60s after returning from Japan. But now everything was new and different. There had been charismatic reform, and they had prayer and praise and songs and tongues. Yes, tongues. Mountaintop. For me personally, a February evening in 1984, when God entered my despair with a voice, I am speaking to you, Tom Weller, and set me free. Life's happiest time, an instant or a touch, a word, a presence that may last years or a few weeks or but a moment, becomes a mountaintop memory in your heart forever. And I know that you have felt that as strongly as I have. That July 1984 summer day, arriving from Pennsylvania at Trinity Church, Apalachicola, and I had a powerful sense that the rest of my life was about to begin, and this new season would be very different and very new. And so it was and has been. In fact, it was like turning around and finding myself in Narnia, a magical place where nothing is the same, and you want it to last forever. And it does, until with Peter, James, and John, you come down the mountain, and life returns to normal, and the thrill is gone, and you can't get it back, except in some measure by calling forth memories, as this gospel invites you to do this morning in your heart and mind, and bring up your own stories, just as a disciple remembered and passed this transfiguration story along to the gospel writers who wrote it down, enriching the life and imagination and possibilities of every Christian forever. What happens to our memories and dreams? Not just night dreams, but the dreams we have about life and even God's dream for us. You weren't here. I was here 100 years ago. I remember that America a century ago was in some ways filled with romantic sentimentality, with drippy, rhyming music of sweet love songs as lovers parted and men were called away to war. Smile the while you kiss me sad adieu. When the clouds roll by, I'll come to you. Then the skies will be so blue. And in my sentimentality, I wonder if the boy came home from war or not, and someone else found his girl. I'm thinking of the stories, but especially life's memories. What are the memories? Where do the memories go? And in this case, who beside his mother kept alive for the rest of her life the boy who did not come home? What about other loved ones and their memories of him? What of his own stories and memories and visions and dreams? Does all that simply die with us? Last week, we celebrated President's Day. When I was a boy, we had two February holidays, Abraham Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday. George Washington's birthday was yesterday, and I was thinking that one of the lovely, peaceful, memorable places I've been is his home at Mount Vernon, Virginia, high on a hill sloping down to the Potomac River. If you've been there and experienced this, you can see forever. And George Washington is buried there. And if you let it happen, as I did, there's a sense of his presence so strong that I wondered if it was only just a sense, or is his love still there? This mountaintop vision that Jesus told Peter, James, and John not to talk about, did it really happen? Did it really happen? They were right there in the middle of it. We do not have the story from Jesus, who left us no autobiography, but Peter, James, or John, or maybe all three of them, told somebody, and now it's part of our holy history. And I ask you to remember, every story in the Bible becomes part of you at your baptism, belongs to you personally. And here we are on the mountain with Jesus. The Bible story of Daniel with his night visions of the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man, are they real? Israel and Jesus have certainly known them as real. Joseph the carpenter, to whom the angel appeared in dreams, once to assure Joseph that Mary had not cheated on him, and again later warning Joseph to take Mary and Jesus and flee to Egypt, was that real? What about your dreams and visions? The voice of God speaking to me that 1984 winter evening, was I awake? I was very sure I was awake at the time. And I'm as sure now as I can be, recalling a mountaintop experience, which was 36 years ago this month. God speaking to me changed my outlook, changed my hopes, changed my life. If it was a vision, it was just as real as today's gospel vision up on the mountain. We are a religion of stories, dreams, visions. We Christians are blessed that someone who was there held on to these memories and told us this story, and we have it today. So there's a story. Epiphany season is ending now. It began January the 6th with a story of wise men coming with gifts to honor Jesus, and then the story of Jesus baptized in the River Jordan as a voice from the cloud proclaimed, "My beloved Son." Throughout Lent, which begins Wednesday, we shall hear more Bible stories. Adam and Eve in the garden, tempted by the serpent. Jesus in the wilderness, tempted by Satan. Moses striking the rock at Meribah and bringing forth water. Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman at the well and telling her, "I am living water." Ezekiel telling about the dry bones coming together. Jesus shouting outside his friend's tomb, "Lazarus, come out!" And then the end. Jesus crucified on Calvary's hill, his one oblation of himself once offered, as our Eucharistic prayer says, a full, perfect, and sufficient sacrifice, oblation, and satisfaction for the sins of the whole world. But then, on the far side of the mountain, a springtime story in another garden. At early dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene comes to the tomb, but Jesus' dead body is not there. And she's crushed. As she stands weeping, he speaks to her, "Mary." Her mountaintop. Do you suppose Mary ever forgot that? Or did it when she needed him return again and again and again? The vision surely returned again and again for Peter, James, and John. And we are people and a religion of stories. You have your own dreams, visions, memories. Today's gospel on the mountain invites you to go back there, up there, to remember, even to shelter there for a time if you need that, as Mary did, as Peter, James, and John did. And you may find, as I did, it was almost like a song. I would not have missed it for the world.